Michael Cohen with the Capital City Recap on more compelling talk radio, 1320 WILS.
Michael Cohen here with producer Emily Scarlett. Send us some feedback, please. Send us an email. Let us know what you think of the interviews, comments you have on them. We'd be happy to air them on the air, talk about them. It's email address is capitalcityrecap@gmail.com. So it's on the governor's desk now, a bill that will remove the cap on charter schools in Michigan. Charter school advocates applauding the soon-to-be-lifted cap, or the soon-to-be-lifting of the cap, I should say, while opponents have some serious concerns about what that will mean to our traditional public schools. To find out what the cap removal will mean, I'm joined by Dan Quisenberry, president of the Michigan Association of Public School Academies. Dan, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael. Good evening.
So is this going to be like popping a champagne cork? Are we going to see charters springing up across the state once the cap is lifted?
No, the celebration really ought to be about the fact that we've recognized the importance of parents being able to choose the school for their children. I mean, we've had charter schools for 17 years, but this is an acknowledgement that it's a continuing part of our public education system. So we're excited about that.
What is your sense of how much growth we'll see? I mean, how many charters do we now have in the state, and what would you say we'll see by the end or this time next year?
We have 255 charter public schools in the state of Michigan, and I think you'll see a continued gradual growth, Michael. What's important here, though, is that we won't be restricting really important options when they do exist. We've literally had cases over the last few years where an authorizer, one of the state universities, has one charter to give, and yet they may have two groups that really could perform creation of an excellent school and meet a local need, but they've got to choose between that one or the other. And that just doesn't make any sense anymore. So they're doing what we want them to do, those authorizers, the universities, in terms of controlling and reviewing both the ability and need.
Now, Democrats wanted to put an amendment in the state constitution barring for-profit charter schools in Michigan. That's how seriously concerned they are about involving profit motive with education. So beyond the money, what are the structural differences typically between a for-profit and nonprofit charter?
Well, that's a distraction, actually. There's a premise that there that just isn't true. There is no such thing as a for-profit charter. And when I say it's a distraction, it's one of those things that came up in the political debate about charter schools. Charter public schools are public schools. They're just the same type of structure from a tax standpoint as any other public school in this state. They do have the ability, as does any public school, to contract out with organizations that provide curriculum or other kinds of things. Charters can also contract out for employ the instructional teachers, etc. So we don't see a difference there. The incentive is, how do you attract parents and students and make sure you're offering the highest quality so they stay, and that you're providing an academic return to the parents and the taxpayers that have supported the school. So we're very comfortable.
I guess I'm not fully clear on that, because you said some charters they're able to contract out, but are there not charter schools where there is a profit that is made through the school system there?
Not any more than there would be in a traditional public school. Traditional public school, if you look at our entire system, it's a $14 billion budget item. So people are making money, whether they are direct employees or whether it's a curriculum company that provides textbooks. And we don't have a problem with that in public schools. So, yeah, a charter just starts with a clean slate, and they can and do choose to hire people directly, like employees, or to contract out for administration or maintenance, or in our case, instructional teachers sometimes.
I'm talking to Dan Quisenberry, president of the Michigan Association of Public School Academies. Dan, how much power do districts have on charters? Can they close them down if they're not performing up to par?
The authority comes from whoever establishes the school, right? We have charter townships. They're basically a contract between one government entity establishing a second government entity. And yeah, that entity that establishes that public school, in most cases universities, has a tremendous amount of authority on the public's behalf to make sure that the public school is complying with laws, whether it's safety or teacher certification or special education, and then certainly holding the school to academic expectations. So, if a charter is not performing, they can and have been closed, and we've seen 50 of those schools closed over the 17 years that charters have existed in Michigan.
How corporatized are charter schools? Aren't there some big companies that own a whole slew of schools?
There are a few, and again, they don't own them. There are some companies, a couple that are based here in Michigan that manage schools here in Michigan and around the country, but most you would call site-based schools or managed locally in some fashion. So, it's a very diverse market, if you want to say that, where people can establish a charter school, and that's all governed by a public board, a school board of public officials. So it's very appropriate, but it does provide an opportunity for people to offer diversity of delivery of education.
I mean, if you've got big companies, though, involved in the system, they likely have a process in place to be able to step in quickly and begin to open charter schools across the state. Is that not the case?
You say the opportunity certainly could be there, but that's not what's happened in the 17 years. We see just a wide variety of schools. There are companies like National Heritage Academies that have been based in Grand Rapids. They have two schools here in Lansing, the Lansing Charter Academy and Windermere Park. But you've also got schools like Shabazz Academy and Cole Academy that are locally managed. They have no network that they're associated with, and that's the majority of the schools in Michigan are those local kinds of schools. So it's an opportunity for anyone that proves they've got the capability to run a high performing school, and they have to be able to do all of it. So it works, and it's going to continue to work in Michigan.
Once things pick up steam several years down the road, let's say 5 years, could we see a quarter or even half of Michigan students going to charter schools?
I don't know if that'll be the case, Michael. Again, I think the interesting kind of thing, certainly here in Lansing, cities like Detroit, because there's a greater need, we've struggled across the country with how to best serve kids that are lower income or where districts have suffered from urban decay. What do we do there? So there's a higher percentage of charters in those areas meeting that need. Other places in the state, though, the charters just don't exist. The traditional schools are meeting the need that's there and doing an excellent job. So, no, I don't think you're going to see just some explosion. It'll be appropriate. It'll fill gaps where there are gaps. It'll provide opportunities for innovation, and we're very excited about that. We've seen some innovation. I think we'll see opportunities for more.
About a minute left. What is the how fast can a charter school be set up? Are we going to see new charters, assuming the governor signs it in the next month or so, by next fall?
Only if they've been in the planning stages already. So, no, it takes a good 2 years to really get a solid plan put together and get open. So it'll be a gradual kind of thing.
Dan Quisenberry, president of the Michigan Association of Public School Academies. Dan, thank you for joining me.
Michael, I appreciate it.
Now, when we come back, we will be talking to a father of of a soldier who was killed in Iraq in 2007. He himself is a Vietnam veteran. He's now a professor, and he'll be telling me about what he thinks about that war, which officially ended today. I also want to once again encourage you to send us an email. We operate on feedback. That is what drives this machine. We want to know what you think, what's interesting to you, and what your response to some of these interviews. So please send us an email to capitalcityrecap@gmail.com. So be back in several minutes right after the news. I'm Michael Cohen, and you are listening to More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.